Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today's Monday, April 1st, 2013. There's not going to be a podcast today. I'm sorry to tell you. There's so many other things that are going on that I was too upset to actually do a podcast. If I had done a podcast today, it would have been podcast number 293. But there's not going to be a podcast today. I'm just too upset about everything that's going on. I'm going ahead and recording this right now because there's a couple things that are really important. I need to get out to get the message out and everything. So it's not really going to be a podcast. It's just going to be touching a few things that are really important. For example, something I'm really upset about is that Porkfest 10, Porkfest X. As the kids say, it has been canceled, unfortunately. It was going to be June 17th through 23rd at the Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire, but the Porkfest has been canceled. And the reason why is what's really got me upset. The whole Free State Project has moved to Delaware. I don't know what they were thinking. The whole Free State Project has left New Hampshire and moved to Delaware. What in the world would cause a person to move to Delaware? Anyway, so Porkfest 10 is canceled. That's really crushing. I was really looking forward to that. Also, I've been giving commercials for the Seacoast Annual Freedom Expo, which was supposed to be April 27th in Exeter, New Hampshire, at the Exeter Town Hall. The only problem is that's been canceled, too. Over the weekend, the Democratic Party of New Hampshire was granted a restraining order on having fun in any New Hampshire coastal city. So it's now against the law anywhere in New Hampshire to have fun in a coastal city because of the Democratic Party of New Hampshire and the silly restraining order of theirs. So, they had to cancel the Seacoast Annual Freedom Expo there in Exeter because Exeter is a coastal town, and they can't be having fun in New Hampshire. That would actually break the law. So, man, I'll tell you, things are getting weird. This was going to be today's podcast, which today's podcast has been canceled, by the way, but there won't be a podcast today. But if I would have done a podcast today, I would have been making my first announcement of the annual Midwest Peace and Freedom Fest, and that was supposed to be hosted by the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition. Unfortunately, it's just like madness is breaking out over the weekend. Unfortunately, the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition was having a meeting with the Ohio Peace and Liberty Alliance, but it turned into a massive bar fight, and all the members of both groups were arrested. Dalton, if you're out there listening, I've almost got your bail put together. I'm about $25 short, so hang in there, buddy. Just sit it out in jail. We'll get to you as soon as we can. I'm thinking we'll probably have the whole... like I said, we're only like $25 short on your bail, so we should have it there probably by this weekend. Anyway, the first annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest has been canceled. Those people in Michigan and Ohio, they'll fight over anything. It's really, I don't know. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. I'm sorry that there's not going to be a podcast today, but I did want to, I got an email from a listener, Mark, in Ontario. He's a real faithful listener, and he emails me a lot, and we have nice conversations back and forth. And I want to read just a little chunk of this email from Mark. He says, "Hello, Ben. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm glad you're home." And then he goes on, talking about when my wife and I were on the road with the motorhome and so forth. So this is the basic introduction like that. And he says, and this is the interesting part, he says, "I was watching the first Alien movie on TV, and for curiosity's sake, I looked it up on Wikipedia." And then he gave me the link here, And I'll put the link up today in the on badquaker.com. Sorry, there's not going to be a podcast today. If there was a podcast, it would be in the show notes. But since we're not having a podcast, I can't really call it show notes. But anyway, so Mark goes on to say the origins section, and this is in Wikipedia, the origins section has an interesting story. To paraphrase, elements of horror movies and many sci-fi movies combined to make the plot of Alien. And in the wiki page, they actually interview Dan O'Banion, who was the screenwriter for Alien. And he says, I didn't steal Alien from anybody. I stole it from everybody. And then Mark goes on to say, he says, here's my take on it. An idea here, a fragment of one there, and from this, a really good movie was made. But that project could have been derailed by the IP nuttiness. You know, he's talking about intellectual property. If you, and what he's saying here is a really good point. If you really follow through logic, and if you say, okay, let's take IP to its extent, then a movie like Alien could have never been made, because essentially Alien is like the screenplay writer said, it's stolen material from a bunch of other pieces of sci-fi work. So if IP were actually legitimate, you couldn't have anything new, which is really just a regurgitation of what was old. You can't have anything new like the Alien series. The whole series would be out of the question. You couldn't do it. So that was a good point by Mark. He's up there in Ontario, Canada. And, you know, really, this is a good point, because you can say the same thing about, like, music. If you think about how jazz is put together, or rock and roll, or the blues, you couldn't have rock and roll if there weren't specific waves of people stealing already created music that was already in the blues and the jazz genres. For instance, like bands like ZZ Top and Led Zeppelin, they wouldn't exist. I mean, their music wouldn't exist if they couldn't steal from old blues songs. And blues itself is just one old guy stealing music from another old guy. I mean, you could wrap up all of blues music in that definition. It's just, you know, one old guy sitting on a porch stealing music from another old guy sitting on a porch. And really, if you think about all pop music, whether we're talking about, you know, the true pop music of nowadays, like the kids listen to or whatever, is really all based on four chords. There's a comedian named Rob, I'm going to mess up his name, sorry about this, Rob Paravoina, maybe? Anyway, he says that Canon in D by Pachelbel. Is everywhere. He can't get away from it. He does this whole comedy routine. If I was doing a podcast today, I'd put a link on today's show notes to a YouTube video where Rob goes through this comedy routine. It's really funny. He plays segments of lots and lots of really popular music, and it all comes back to Canon in D by Pachelbel. Well, whatever the guy's name is, you know who I'm talking about. If I was doing a podcast today, I'd actually get the pronunciation out and try to figure it out. Because words like that, you know, you read them all the time, but you rarely hear them pronounced. So I'm not really sure how to pronounce the last name of the guy who composed Canon in D. But anyway, it's also, there's an Australian comedy group called Axis of Awesome. And they have sort of this comedy routine where they take those same four chords from Canon and D, and they just go through nonstop from one pop song to the other, and they do 38 songs in a row using those same four chords from Canon and D. Everything from like Journey, Don't Stop Believing, all the way to like The Offspring, Lady Gaga. I don't know. A lot of the bands and the music I don't even recognize. One of them they do is Banjo Patterson's Waltzing Matilda. They show that waltzing Matilda is basically those same four chords from Canon and D. So really, you know, if you took if IP was legitimate, then we wouldn't have any, we wouldn't have any popular music at all. I mean, it's all just based on, copying. But that's really what all invention is like this. You know, who was it? Isaac Newton said that in reference to his own genius and his own discoveries and his own thinking, he said, really, I'm just standing on the shoulders of giants. And you know, that's what discovery is. That's what invention is. That's what innovation is. You build on what's already been done. That's not theft. That's not IP theft. That's what drives humanity, and it's what drives innovation. It's what drives industry. If I was doing a podcast today, I could probably go on that topic and just do a whole topic just on IP. But unfortunately, I'm not doing a podcast today, so I can't be doing that. I was, however, reading on the internet, somebody at over on Facebook from, I think it was, I can't remember, so I'm not sure. Anyway, they had discovered that there's a section in the book of Judges in the Bible that essentially lays out the story of the 500 years that Israel remained stateless, that they were a nation. Well, they weren't really, I suppose, in the modern definition, they weren't a nation. But for 500 years, Israel was an voluntary anarchical society, and they didn't have any central government whatsoever. And they, you know, in the words of the Bible, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And they functioned perfectly for 500 years. They held off invasions from, you know, they were surrounded by major empires and some huge city-states that were right in the same area. And they survived without, without a successful invasion of their land, holding off massive empires for 500 years, and then they got jealous of these other pagan nations who had kings and who had governments, and so they went to the judge Samuel, and they demanded a king. And Samuel took this personally. He was like, "Man, these people, what are they doing? They're rejecting, this form of leadership, this non-governmental form of leadership that had existed for 500 years, where a system of voluntary judges arbitrated between people, but it was all an anarcho society." And so Samuel was upset that the people were wanting to form a government, and he prays to God. You know, he's like, "God, why are these people rejecting me?" And God's like, "Samuel, chill, dude. They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me." You see, the story that is there in Judges is that when the people of Israel demanded to have a state and demanded to have a king over them, what they were essentially doing was they were voluntarily going into servitude of a human king, thereby rejecting the design that God had set up for them. And so, in God's words, they weren't rejecting Samuel; they were rejecting God by demanding a state. And so Samuel tells him, "Okay, well, here's what you're going to get. If you want a king, and if you want a state, if you want a central government, here's what you're going to get. You're going to get taxation. You're going to get a draft. You're going to get, your women are going to be taken out of your homes. Your daughters are going to be taken out of your homes and be made into servants of a king. There's going to be concubines. Your daughters are going to be made into concubines of the king. And your sons are going to be hauled off to war, and they're going to die in wars. And violence is going to be taught among your sons, and it's going to bring violence upon you." And so the end result, after 500 years in an anarchical society of peace, of relative peace, although they were attacked from the outside, but they defended themselves successfully. But after 500 years of relative peace, they demanded and got a central government. Immediately there was a clash, and the first king ended up dead, and in the middle of a war, by the way. The first king took them almost immediately into a war that he couldn't actually execute. He got himself killed in that war. Then another king pops up, and that king, immediately was, the Bible calls him a man of war. That was David. He was constantly at war with somebody. And then there's essentially an internal war between David's two sons, And it causes the death of David's son. And then, you know, the other son takes over, and he's relatively, this is Solomon, he's a relatively, you know, I put in quotes, a good king. But at the same time, the taxation was just blistering. And so it wasn't all that happy a time. It was a time of alliances with a lot of different countries, and you know, a lot of decadence came in that wasn't there before, and you know, there was a sort of a glorification of the capital in Jerusalem, and then, you know, eventually Solomon died, and then eventually the kingdom gets split in half, and then the northern half of the kingdom is just wiped out, and it disappears into the sand of time, and the southern half of the kingdom gets invaded by Babylon. The all of the upper members of the government and of society are hauled off as slaves to Babylon. The city is burned, crops are burned, and that's the result of the of the Israel, of the people of Israel demanding a government rather than the 500 years of anarchical society that they had enjoyed. If I was doing a podcast today, I could do a podcast just on that one topic. But anyway, so this person on Facebook says they discovered this, and they're like, look at this. Here's anarchy. Is God an anarchist? Is this a good thing in the Bible? And of course it is. Christian anarchism is a very old thing. If you and if I was doing a podcast today, I'd put a link in today's show notes. But if you look up in Wikipedia, just put in the words Christian anarchism in Wikipedia. There's a really good article in Wikipedia on it, and it goes through and talks about how. Well, it mentions that in the book of Judges, where what I just now described, but it also goes into the New Testament and in the Bible and the early church and how the early church was a anarcho society, and how the Sermon on the Mount has been used extensively as a basis for Christian anarchism, and how really the early Christians were very much anarchist right up until about the time that the Emperor Constantine, as the story goes, converted to Christianity. And that, you know, that's a whole different discussion right there, whether how convenient it was for the emperor to suddenly convert to Christianity right when he did. And there's a whole, you know, we could get in. Maybe I'll do that one of these days. Maybe I'll do a whole thing on the Emperor Constantine, because that's a really fascinating topic, his conversion to Christianity. And his mother was an interesting character. Maybe if I eventually get back to doing podcasts again, I'll do one just on Constantine and his conversion. But the point being that up until that time, pretty much all Christians were anarchists, and it was only at that time when Christianity became legal that it moved into accepting the state as a legitimate thing. And this article in Wikipedia does a pretty good job. You know, one of the objections to Christian anarchism is this little passage by Paul in the New Testament, where he essentially says that you should obey government. But they do a pretty good job in Wikipedia here of presenting the different arguments of different anarchists as to why that really shouldn't be accepted. And then there's a nice list, Leo Tolstoy, David Lipscomb. There's a nice list of different, Henry David Thoreau, of different Christian anarchists, and talks about each one. It has a little story, I guess you could say a synopsis of each of them. A pretty good list, and that's a really good source for Christian anarchists. Since I'm not doing a podcast today, I'm not really going to go into it and talk about all the evidence there is that really all true Christianity should be based on anarchism. And any time that anyone who calls themselves a Christian adheres to the idea that that a government based on aggression, where they forcibly take wealth from some people and then redistribute it to other people, and they take wealth from people and then they go and they destroy property and they kill people using the money that they stole from working people within there. You know, anytime a Christian advocates that kind of thing, I just scratch my head and I say, you know, how can this person use the phrase Christian when the actual teachings of Jesus were the exact opposite of what governments do? And Jesus was killed by a government. Jesus was killed by a coalition of the religious leaders in Jerusalem and the government. So he was literally killed by the church and the government. And yet, Christians today think government's a good thing, and we should all, you know, rally around the flag and support the troops, and we should all, oh, we need to kill all those little dirty brown people in those foreign countries because we can't have them hating America. We need to go over there and send drones and bomb their families, blow up babies and things like this in the name of Jesus, right? I mean, is that really logical thinking on the part of a person who calls themselves a Christian? Anyway, it's a good thing I'm not doing a podcast today, because that's the kind of thing I could ramble on for an hour or so just talking about that. But there is no podcast today. I'm sorry that we're not going to have a podcast today. You know, but I was thinking in reference to, you know, talking about Christian anarchism, there's a lot of different ways that a person can view how do you deal with the state, how do you deal with government and its existence. And looking at that list in Wikipedia of the different Christian anarchists and how different their methods were for dealing, you know, with the government. You think of Henry David Thoreau, and his method of dealing with the government was kind of like, you know, well, he complained. He did complain. But mostly he put his hands over his ears, closed his eyes, and went, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, I see no government, I see no government. And then he was free of the government. He just wandered off into the woods, lived, you know, on someone else's property, built his own cabin without permits or permission or anything, and tried to live like there was no government. Now, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying, you know, it worked for Henry David Thoreau. It can't work for me, but it worked for him. And it does work for some people. Some people can do that today. Some people can, you know, if you have the money of somebody like Doug Casey, then sure, you just, you know, go to South America, buy up a few thousand acres, and make your own little anarcho-capitalist retreat. If you can do that, if you got a few million laying around that you're not doing anything with, you can do that. Think of Petri Friedman. You know, he was early on involved in getting Google up and running, and he made a nice little pocket full of cash from that, and so he's able to do things like the Seasteading Institute and some of the other projects that he's worked on. That's not an option for me. It's not just, I can't fight the state, or I can't resist government by, you know, setting up a multi-million-dollar account and formulating an institute and, you know, trying to build my own city on the ocean. I can't do that. It's not within the realm of possibility. And then you think of somebody, Google lists this guy, I don't know if you've heard of him or not, Philip Berrigan. He only died in 2002. He was quite the peace activist. He was an anarchist, and he was kind of, you know, he was a lefty. He was a little bit on the left side, but he was an anarchist, and he was a Christian, and he was a peace activist, and ended up on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. Ended up spending time in prison and just all, you know, I can't do that. That's not an option for me. I just can't do that. But you look at the different ways that people have attempted to deal with the government or tempted to fight the government or whatever, you know. Think of Peter Schiff's dad. And I don't know his, you know, faith or whatever. I have no idea. But he was a man who was trying to make his stand and fight against oppressive government. And so, you know, of course, he ends up in prison. In the last report I had, he was hospitalized and really in bad shape. I hope he's well. But, you know, that's, again, that's just not an option for me. I don't see that really as a viable option for anybody. I don't, you know, Peter Schiff's dad, his name escapes me at the moment. It'll probably pop into my head later. But if I were doing a podcast today, I would have notes on this kind of stuff, and I would have his name in front of me. But I'm not doing a podcast today, so I don't have any notes on Peter Schiff's dad. But he was, Irwin, that was his name, Irwin, or is his name. I assume he's still alive. I hope he's still alive. Irwin Schiff had done tremendous work in exposing the evils of government and the evils of taxation. But now he's been in jail for years, and almost none of the current generation of anarchists and tax haters and, you know, libertarians of different sorts, almost none of them know who Irwin Schiff is, even though, you know, he was foundational in battling the government. Well, so the government neutralized him by sticking him in prison. Now nobody knows who he is. Nobody reads his books. It's just gone. So you know, you think about, well, what can I do that actually can have not just a positive impact, but, you know, I've talked before about shooting at a goal. If you're just shooting off wildly, you're not going to hit your goal. I mean, what are the odds that you're going to hit a bullseye on a target if you just shoot randomly everywhere? There's a thing going on in New Hampshire right now that I saw. I kid you not. There's a guy that's planning on doing a protest today in New Hampshire, where he's going to, excuse my language, he's going to poop on the street in front of one of the courthouses in New Hampshire. Of course, you know, that's a pretty amazing thing. And he lost all his support in this. There was a lot of enthusiasm. You know, a lot of the Free Staters like, yeah, let's go poop on the street in front of the courthouse. And there was a lot of enthusiasm about that. And then, you know, I think that probably played a part in the entire new Free State Project leaving New Hampshire and moving to Delaware. I'm not for exactly sure if that was a major part or a minor part, but it was some kind of a defecation protest that they had planned for today. And it's my understanding that that was one of the factors in moving the Free State Project to Delaware, was in distancing themselves from public pooping. But, you know, you see these things that are tried over and over. I mean, how many times have we seen the public pooping thing tried as a demonstration against the government? You just see it so many times, and it never works. It's like, you know, there's a quote that goes, insanity is repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results. And this is often attributed to Albert Einstein, although there's no actual evidence that he ever said anything like that. That did appear in the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous back in 1982, but there's nothing actually to indicate that Albert Einstein ever said that. If you know, the thing I've observed is, if you come up with something that you, some kind of saying that you think is really cool, the thing to do is to attribute that, you know, make a quote out of it, and if possible, make a meme, you know, get a catchy picture and put the quote on that picture and attribute it to either, you know, Albert Einstein, Jefferson, Franklin, Mark Twain, George Carlin, Andy Rooney. If you associate that quote with any of these people, even if you made it up yourself, if you associate that quote with any of those people, it'll take off. People will buy it. People will love it. Because, you know, all those people are, it's kind of like Abraham Lincoln once said. Abraham Lincoln once said, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. And I think that really sums up, you know, the insight of Lincoln to be able to say that, really sums up the essence of the internet right there. But in all seriousness, WikiQuotes said that there was a 1975 publication of Wildlife Management Institute that quoted something very similar to that supposed Einstein quote, and they claimed it was Einstein who said it, but they didn't provide any source material for it. I got that from WikiQuotes some time back, that they had basically debunked that came from Einstein. The closest thing WikiQuotes could find was a statement that Einstein said in 1946 to the New York Times Magazine. He said, many persons have inquired concerning a recent message of mine that a new type of thinking is essential if mankind is to survive and move to higher levels. Often in evolutionary processes, a species must adapt to new conditions in order to survive. Today, the atomic bomb has altered profoundly the nature of the world as we know it, and the human race consequently finds itself in a new habitat to which it must adapt its thinking. In light of new knowledge, an eventual world state is not just desirable in the name of brotherhood, it is necessary for survival. Today, we must abandon competition and secure cooperation. This must be the central fact in all our considerations of international affairs. Otherwise, we face certain disaster. Past thinking and methods did not prevent world wars. Future thinking must prevent wars. And that was the actual quote that Einstein said that has probably been twisted around to mean insanity is repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results. So you can see that there's like almost no correlation between Einstein's actual quote and what is attributed to him. And it's also funny, too, because you often hear anarchists, including me, using that phrase, you know, if you just keep repeating the same mistake over and over and over, expecting a different result, that's not very smart. But the odd thing is that Einstein, his real quote that I just read to you, was saying that the only way for man to survive is if we have a one-world government. Isn't that odd? That's really Einstein's point, was that you have to have a one-world government in order for mankind to survive. It's a good thing there's no podcast today, because I could do a whole podcast just on that topic right there. You know, but I'm not going to do a podcast today. Unfortunately, it's just not going to work out for today. And so I did want to mention a couple things, though. Let me just throw out another often quoted quote. An often quoted quote, yeah. People always say this is a great Edmund Burke quote. I'm going to read it in a dramatic voice. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. Edmund Burke. Or sometimes they'll say it, Sir Edmund Burke. Well, I don't say Sir Edmund Burke. I don't use phrases like that, you know, because it's disgusting. Anyway, and if I were doing a podcast today, I could do a podcast strictly on why I don't use titles like Sir and Your Honor and Your Magistrate and all these stupid things. But anyway, so Edmund Burke is often quoted as saying that, but he didn't say that. That's not what he said. Now, listen to the two in comparison. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. That's the quote, right? But the actual quote is, when bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one, an unpitied sacrifice in a contemptible struggle. It doesn't have the same snap, does it? As a matter of fact, it doesn't even have the same meaning. But, you know, that's what you get when you start, I'm not going to get off on silly quotes because I just don't have, you know, if I was going to do a podcast today, I might do that. I might do like the whole podcast on misquotes that are attributed to different people. But there won't be any podcast today. One other thing before I let you go, over at the Bad Quaker Forum, we have, if you go to badquaker.com and you look over in the right-hand side, there's a link there to the forum. And we had a lot of enthusiasm with the forum when we very first set it all up and everything, and a lot of new people came in, and there was a lot of good discussion. It was really great. And then I abandoned it from, let's say, December all the way till a couple weeks ago. And And you know, in all honesty, people ask me questions, and there had been conversations going on and stuff. And then I go for like 3 months without being on there, without really answering questions, without really interacting with the forum or everything. So it kind of sagged. So we're starting to pick back up now, and we're starting to get new members again. And I'm trying to get over there at least once a day and look around and maybe post if possible. And then, and in all seriousness, I was blown away by this. David Friedman, you know, he was going to be one of the main speakers at the Pork Fest before they canceled Pork Fest, before the Free State Project all moved to Delaware and they canceled Pork Fest. David Friedman was a noted anarchist and contemporary of, you know, Murray Rothbard and a lot of the great thinkers in our movement. David Friedman is the son of economist Milton Friedman and, you know, Petri Friedman, the Google and Seasted guy that I mentioned a minute ago, is David Friedman's son. So it's a family of really, really smart people. But David was going to be a speaker at Porkfest before they canceled it. But he came over to the forum because, you know, I had a couple weeks ago or something like that, I had done a podcast where I said some kind of rude things about David Friedman, specifically in regards to his disagreement with Murray Rothbard over Murray Rothbard. Basically, Murray Rothbard did an attack piece on David Friedman. And then David Friedman, sometime later, sort of gave his defense. And I was displeased with David Friedman's defense. So I had some sort of harsh words about it. Well, as it turns out, so David Friedman then came over to the Bad Quaker Forum and created an identity, and he and I have been in this, I think, as far as I'm concerned, from my point of view, it's been a friendly conversation. I hope that's the way David sees it. But we have been kind of going back and forth and you know, exchanging our opinions and so forth, and I realized that I actually misread David's original defense against Rothbard's attack. I misread that, and I missed part of his point. So I had to, I actually had to apologize to David Friedman for misunderstanding him and jumping to the wrong conclusion. I had accused him of using a sleight of hand trick to divert the conversation away from Rothbard's point. And that's not really what he did. I just simply misread his statement. So now, if I was doing a podcast today, I would most definitely reiterate that I apologize to David Friedman for saying that he had essentially did a personal attack on Rothbard and tried to divert the topic and so forth. If I were doing a podcast today, I would definitely apologize to David Friedman. But you can go over to the Bad Quaker Forum. And if you just go to the general discussion section and you look for the post called, it's titled Hate and Dishonesty, Your Critique of My Response to Rothbard's Argument. And I'm not kidding. This is actually David Friedman has gone onto the forum there and engaged me in conversation, and it's been going on. If you like to read stuff like that, if you like to read long discussions between two people, it's fascinating for me anyway. It's fascinating reading. I really enjoyed the interchange, and it's still ongoing. I need to respond to the last thing that he said, actually, but it was to me, it was a really good interchange between David and myself. And I, as I said, I did realize that I was mistaken, and I apologized to him. That's right there in the forum. You can read it for yourself. Also, though, you know, David, a couple different times in the conversation, quotes outside sources and refers to other things that he's already written. And I decided, when David first made his post, I decided, you know, a lot of times, whether I'm on Facebook or whether I'm at some other site or whatever, a lot of times somebody will say something to me indicating that they really, you know, they might have an awareness of some level of what I believe and what I teach and what I talk about and the things, the principles that I hold to. But if it's obvious that they really don't have a good grasp on the basic things that that the whole bad Quaker thing is based on, then a lot of times I'll just refer them to, look, you know, here's a podcast, listen to this, or here's an article I wrote, read that. Because I don't have, I mean, I hate to sound this way, but I don't have time to completely rebuild the entire structure of my belief system, you know, 20 times a day, every time somebody questions, well, why do you think this or why do you think that? It's just easier to go, well, look, it's a very complicated thing. Why don't you listen to this podcast or whatever? Well, I decided early on in this discussion with David that I wasn't going to do that to him. I wasn't going to just say, you know, because he's kind of an important person in the liberty movement. Why should I tell him, well, David, if you disagree with me, go listen to this 30 hours of podcasts. You know, I'm not going to do that to the guy. So I decided early on that I was not going to just refer to other things. Like, if you want to know what I believe, go listen to that. I would try to lay my thoughts out to David in a way that I haven't done for a while, you know, in print like that, and let him and any other readers scrutinize my entire defense. And I don't know. Text is such it's not a good way to express these things at all. But it's important sometimes to put these things down in writing so that they can be scrutinized. So actually, if you go over there to the forum and you find that, again, it's in general discussion under the heading Hate and Dishonesty, Your Critique of My Response to Rothbard's Argument. Go over there and read that and see for yourself if my defense against David's charges, if I do a good job or if I do a bad job, and you know, feel free to do as David did and make a login and express your comments in there as well. You know, the more comments, the better. If I were doing a podcast today, I could probably talk about that quite a bit. But there's not going to be a podcast today. You know, there's just too many things that have been happening over the weekend in the last few days. I'm just way too upset to do a podcast. My daughter Kai is hiking the Appalachian Trail, and she's called a couple times, and we've done updates on her progress. Well, she called from over the weekend. She called from a spot that she had, you know, cell coverage, so that she was able to check in and say hi and stuff. And she says that to walk the trail through the Smoky Mountains, it cost $20. It cost $20 just to walk through the mountains. And it's the Smoky Mountains. It's not even a real mountain range. It's part of the Appalachians. It's just an arbitrary area that somebody decided to rename something different. It's just part of the Appalachian Mountains. And they're going to charge you $20 just to walk through it. It's not, you know, it'd be different if it was private property, if somebody owned it and they said, well, you know, you can walk across my land, it's going to cost you $20. That'd be one thing. But it's stolen land to begin with. It was, you know, stolen. In addition to that, there's no upkeep. The government doesn't do any upkeep in that area to the Appalachian Trail. It's all done on a voluntary basis by people who enjoy the Appalachian Trail. So the government's not doing any upkeep on it. They didn't pay anything for it to begin with. They stole it to begin with. They're not doing anything to upkeep it, and still they want to charge you $20 to walk across it. Amazing. If I were doing a podcast today, I could do a podcast just on that topic, just on that one thing, just talking about how the government steals from you and then charges you for it. And then they steal the land, and then they steal the money from you to upkeep it, and then they want to charge you to use it. It's amazing. Oh, one of the things that really got me upset over the weekend, you know, I have this really good friend named Eddie Free. He's pretty well known in the liberty movement. He's a real active person. He was the one that thought up and did the dance protest at the Jefferson Memorial, got himself arrested and all that kind of thing. Well, Eddie has been helping out with the story of the Turtle Island Preserve. He's kind of taken on this whole battle. I don't know I'm hearing the name of this gentleman pronounced Estes Conway and Eustace Conway, so I'm not sure which is correct. I think Eddie is pronouncing it Eustace. But anyway, But Eddie has taken on this burden of trying to help Mr. Conway in his trouble with the government over his Turtle Island Preserve. And they're trying to, you know, they're just doing everything they can to disrupt the man's life, and they're eventually going to steal his property. I mean, that's just what they do. That's what they're going to do with him. And hopefully they don't kill him in the process like they have some. But anyway, Eddie has really taken this on as a personal thing to help Conway in this. And then there's this guy, this Jesus freak. Now, I know that sounds derogatory, but it is. And I'm not throwing all Christians. You know, a minute ago I was identifying myself as a Christian anarchist. So I'm not saying all people who believe in God or all Christians or whatever are Jesus freaks. But your stereotypical Jesus freak is a person of limited intelligence who thinks God talks to them constantly, and everything that they do in their life, they think God is making it happen, or they think, you know, every thought they have, they think it comes from God. Well, that's kind of what this this Jesus freak is that attacked Eddie Free over the last few days. He evidently, the guy's story, this Jesus freak story, is that he and his wife, who is also a nut, were doing something or other. I don't know if they were watching TV or you know, staring at a picture on the wall or something. Either way, they found out about this story of Eustace Conway and his trouble with Turtle Island Preserve. And they and this is the Jesus freak's own story. This is not me making this up. He claims that God spoke to him and told him to set up a charity to collect money. But evidently this God that was speaking to him can't Google, because if all he'd had to do is just put Estes Conway's name or Turtle Island Preserve into Google, and he would have discovered that there's already a website, there's already a charity, there's already a Facebook page run by Eddie Free, my friend, and there's already charities, there is already a official charity set up to help Estes Conway or Eustace Conway. But evidently this guy, and this Jesus freak dude claims to be part of the Liberty Movement. He claims to be a Ron Paul supporter, but nobody that we can find, and literally thousands of people that Eddie and I are in contact with in the Liberty Movement, nobody's ever heard of this guy. Nobody knows him. So he sets up this charity with all the money coming back to himself, by the way, not going to Estes Conway. But he promises he would, if he got the money, he would give it to Mr. Conway, right? And so rather than Google and find out if there's already something there, God tells him to set the charity up with him as the beneficiary, not Eustace Conway. So, and then in the discussion on Facebook, I really laughed at this one. Numerous people had mentioned the non-aggression principle, and the reason they had mentioned it is because this Jesus freak dude keeps threatening people. I mean, physically threatening people. He told Eddie Free that if Eddie didn't publicly apologize to him, that he was going to attack this old man, Estes Conway, that he was going to attack and harm this old man, this peaceful old man, this farmer. He's going to attack him if Eddie didn't apologize. That's a weird, really weird. I wonder if his God told him to do that too. That's a really weird, you know, if I were doing a podcast today, I'd probably want to talk a lot about this. But fortunately, I'm not doing a podcast today, so I'm not going to go into it. But anyway, so this guy, he actually did collect thousands of dollars. Now, because of all the people who saw that it was a scam and they contacted the website that was hosting the charity, then investigated, found out, yes, indeed, this is a scam, shut the guy down. And that's why he was so mad at Eddie Free, because the website, that's a legitimate website that was hosting the charity that this guy had set up, investigated him, figured out, yes, indeed, he is a scammer, and so they shut him down. And so that killed the opportunity for him to, you know, collect on all these thousands of dollars that he was getting from people who thought they were donating to Estes Conway. And so, you know, weird thing. People are so odd. If I was doing a podcast today, you know, I would probably want to talk about that. But I'm so upset. I just read this morning that North Korea had launched a wave of missiles attacking the U.S., specifically targeting U.S. cities, that these missiles were literally on the way to America now from North Korea. And it really just, You know, that's one of the things this morning that caused me to decide, you know, I'm not doing a podcast today. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not doing a podcast today. If I'm going to die from a North Korean missile attack today, I'm not going to be doing a podcast while that happens. I'm going to spend time, you know, with my wife or my family, go see my grandson or something like that. I'm not going to spend my time sitting here recording a podcast while North Korean missiles are flying at me. According to the news people that I'm reading, North Korea has specifically targeted Bakersfield, Tulsa, Hoboken, Walla Walla, Wichita, Tuscaloosa, and Roswell, New Mexico. So the I probably wouldn't get burned by the flash of the giant North Korean nuclear explosions going off, and I probably am. Well, I'm kind of downwind of Wichita and Walla Walla, according to how the jet stream goes in weather and so forth. So eventually, the fallout will probably reach here in Ohio, and I'll probably die from that. But still, again, that's a reason right there. That's a reason enough not to do a podcast today. I mean, if we're all going to die from North Korea attacking America, then there's just no reason to do a podcast today. You know, I saw, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Google over the weekend ran a picture of the labor leader, Cesar Chavez, as their doodle. You know, Google, when they have a holiday or some event or whatever, somebody's birthday or death date or whatever, they change the where it says Google, that's called a doodle, and they change that in recognition of the person. So Sunday was Cesar Chavez's birthday, so they had Cesar Chavez as their doodle rather than the Christian holiday of Easter. Now, being a Quaker, and even before I was a Quaker, I didn't really recognize like one day over the other, and I realized that the celebration of even the word Easter comes from a Middle Eastern pagan goddess that was goddess of the spring and goddess of fertility and sexual rituals and things like this. So, you know, I knew that like when I was like 17, 18 years old. So I was never really into any of the big Christian holidays or anything like that, or even really, birth dates and things like that are not a big deal to me. So I don't care one way or the other if Google puts Cesar Chavez, or an Easter bunny or whatever. It doesn't affect me one way or the other. I just click on the button. If I'm searching Google, I don't care. I put in what I'm searching. I click the button. I go find it. But evidently, you know, this Jesus freak that's so angry with Eddie Free, evidently the Jesus freak, this is the guy that I was mentioning a second ago that threatened this peaceful farmer, threatened to beat up the farmer if Eddie, because he was mad at Eddie. I don't know, weird. Anyway, he was really upset that Google had Cesar Chavez's image on there. On Easter, on this holy day. And so he has threatened to attack Estes Conway if Patrick Freeman doesn't shut down Google. Yeah, that's weird, huh? Then he said he'd never heard of the Seasteading Institute or the World Series of Poker. Now, if you know anything about Patrick Freeman, then you'd be laughing about that right now, that he doesn't know, that this Jesus freak doesn't know anything about the Seasteading Institute or the World Series of Poker. But anyway, I could probably go into that and talk a lot about the World Series of Poker if I was doing a podcast today, but I'm not really going to be doing any podcasting today. What with those North Korean missiles coming at us and everything. One other thing before I let you go. I did read on Facebook that Eddie Free is having a baby. Congratulations, Eddie. It's about time. Eddie's not a young man anymore. He's handsome still. He's a pretty man, I'll tell you that. Eddie is a pretty man. But he's not a young man anymore. It's time for him to settle down. So yeah, Eddie is pregnant. He should be showing. Well, I started to say he should be showing by the time Porkfest comes around. But rats, I forgot. Porkfest has been canceled and the entire Free State movement has moved to Delaware. Well, that's about it. I guess Delaware is probably the only place that's safe from the North Korean missile attack anyway, what with most of Delaware being under a bomb shelter. That's probably a wise move. That, maybe that's it. Maybe Ian Freeman knew ahead of time that North Korea was going to launch all their missiles today. Maybe that's why they moved to Delaware. I'll bet that's what it is. Well, since there's probably not going to be any more podcasts because I'll probably be dead by radiation poisoning, thanks for listening today. And remember to visit badquaker.com before you die because liberty's our mission. And even if we die from the fallout from North Korea, it's still going to be our mission. So hang in there, folks.